everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, along with Denise Miller, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman Recovery Community Centers. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community Center is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRCC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. And their hours are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Whitman Recovery Community Center is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRCC by phone at 509-715-1111. Or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny. I am a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And across the table in the studio / conference room with me is Miss Denise. Good morning, Denise.
Hi, everybody. Glad you're all here listening today.
Yeah, morning, afternoon. I don't know what it is.
It's fine. It's early afternoon.
I'm still recovering from St. Patrick's Day and watching all the amateurs out there thinking they can drink green beer and behave properly.
Really, it's Johnny ate all the good food. That's what I've been hearing about.
So today, the calendar, go out on the web and look at it. Is there anything in particular coming up, Denise, that you know about that's new and exciting?
I'm sure there is, but I'm unprepared for that question. And I also want to mention that on our Latah Recovery Community Center site, you can also find our previous recordings. So I just want to throw that out there, you know, in case you're just really feeling like you want to listen to more.
That's right.
We have that available for you.
You can also pick them up on Google Play or whatever that's called now and iTunes. There's some episodes out there as well. I'm working on trying to get to a place where we can store more. And actually, there's a site that I post them to called radioforall.net. And that's radio, the number for all, A-L-L.net. And you can search Recovery Radio on there. And it's got about 2 years of shows on there. And you can download them from there. It's a free website. It's virus-free and all that good stuff. It's, you know, basically a community-funded thing. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you can always catch us there.
Yeah, and I think there's like a little title to each one, so you can kind of have an idea if we had a guest that day or what our subject matter was.
Right, exactly. And a lot of people do pick it up from that radioforall.net. I was looking at some that we put out around a year ago, and there had been over like 400 downloads, so people are picking it up there. What they're doing with it, I have no idea, but I'm good with that. Whatever they're doing works for me.
Yeah.
So today, Denise and I were chatting before we started the show, and it's the third month, and one of the very bad habits of the group Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'm a member of, every month relates to a step. 12 steps, 12 months. Coincidence? I think not. And the third month, March, usually we end up talking a lot about the third step of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is kind of a big one for most people, or at least a stumbling block for a lot of people. And it's made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. So a lot of people come into the program. They may be recovering from a particular religious experience from years ago. They may be agnostic and, you know, not really, you know, sure about this higher power, creative force in the universe, whatever you want to call it. And then you have your atheist and belligerent atheists who insist there is no God and will spend a great deal of your time trying to explain it to you, whether you want to hear it or not.
And also, there are people who are grateful believers.
Yes,
and have faith of different kinds of, some might call it like religious subtitles or whatever, just non-denominational.
And there are a lot of people like that that come in as well. Thank you for reminding me of that. I tend to focus on the people that are anti-religious, so to speak, because I see a lot of them.
And I think I've heard over the years you just really sharing on that subject in a sense to be able to reach people so that they're not discouraged of coming through the doors. It's not like anyone is saying that you have to anything. It's like, please consider. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. A God of your own conception is what they refer to. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, when I came in, I had had a bad experience in my youth with organized religion, and I never really lost the idea that there might be a creative force in the universe, a higher power, God, even. And it's always important to remember that for me, that God is not a name; it's a job title. So I look at it that way, and it works much better for me because I don't have to know what God is, what he looks like, despite the pictures of the man with the big beard in the cloud, you know, that you see in some religious organizations. I have realized personally that God is a concept beyond my total understanding. I mean, if I understood God, I would be God. And like a friend of mine says, you know the difference between you and God, Johnny? And I'm like, what's that? He says, well, when God wakes up in the morning, he doesn't think he's you. So, yeah, it keeps me humble. But, you know, back to it. It can be really tough for some people to make a decision to turn their will and their lives over to the care of something they either don't know about or absolutely don't believe in, which is why they, in the AA literature, they parse that by saying, you know, a higher power of your own conception, you know. And for me, alcohol was a power greater than me. You know, it had me in its grips. I could not put it away without help. Then the AA group became a power greater than me because they were able to help me, you know, overcome that, you know, overwhelming urge to drink ridiculous amounts of alcohol and ruin my life and slowly commit suicide, which is what I was doing. So the nice thing about this third step, when it says we came to believe, well, the second step says we came to believe in a power, that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Okay, well, that's going to take some time because we came to believe. We aren't required to believe. And a friend of mine in the program says, when I came in here, they told me I had to believe, but they didn't tell me what. They said, you're going to have to figure that out for yourself. And that makes a great deal of sense to me. So back to this third step, made a decision. Let's break that down. What is a decision? It's not an action. It's the beginning of a mental process. You know, I decide, the thing is there's three frogs on a log. One of them makes a decision to jump off the log. How many frogs are on the log? Well, three, because he made a decision. He didn't take the action yet. So making a decision is just saying, for me, it's just saying to myself, I'm going to believe in something. You know, a power, I'm going to believe that somewhere there's a power greater than me in the universe or outside the universe in the spiritual realm that loves me and wants me to be happy. How was that decision process brought to you? Do you recall in your youth?
So,
or older?
I would say that this started kind of happening as I was in my time out in Lathrop County Jail for a month, and I was given this time to reflect and take a look at how things have been going in this first 40 years of my life, which I didn't actually wind up having specific problems with substances until about 28 or so. And like I said, I was there when I was 40. And I woke up the first morning at about 6 a.m. and I wasn't sick, which was really surprising after being an opioid addict along with struggling with a lot of other things. And then from there, so while I was there, just back up a second, while I was there, I did a lot of reflecting and praying and forgiving of other people. And my perspective started to shift, and I really felt like God was there with me in this process. And I was really grateful to not be sick and to be feeling encouraged, even though I was in jail, you know? So I was kind of planting seeds. And then I've shared before how I got into the NA book and realized that I was an actual addict. I don't know why, but the denial was super thick. And then I also got into the recovery book that was there and just started reading and again, feeling really encouraged as a new person. Well, I won't say as a new person, as a person new in recovery, and reading God's word, I got some of it, you know, kind of surface level. But then after I got out and was about a year into recovery, I started attending church and then attending Celebrate Recovery and learning more and more. And in the CR step study, and I was trying to remember right now, because I actually think I have book one in my purse, what step is turning your life and your will over to God? And I'm almost thinking it's two, but I'm not totally sure. So we're just going to roll with it. With
I'm pretty sure it's step. Is it three, two and maybe? Three are combined in the CR study. Like, we talked about that.
Right, because it's like they have a step and they have like a principle. Right. And it goes, what is it? Coming out of denial, powerlessness, and hope are like the first three chapters in the book, but it's 25 chapters. And like I said, step and a principle with it. So Sorry, well, I'm just kind of catching up my brain on the spot. We talked about this right before we aired. But so my story, I was really realizing, like I said, even in the local jail, that like my life hadn't been going very well. I wasn't making very good choices. Mm-hmm. I started thinking about, and I had been thinking about how I'd hurt so many people in my family and myself and my health and my relationships and things. It was time for me to turn over my life and my will to what God had for me, because I wasn't doing a very good job. You know, I really wasn't.
Yeah.
And that concept and choice has just continued to grow. And the understanding of what that means is continuing to grow each day as I'm looking to God's word and in prayer for him to guide my life. It's like, I heard something the other month, and I feel like this really describes it well. And it is, do what you can in the natural and let God do in the supernatural what you can't do for yourself. So in my circles of CR, we talk about there's my part, there's God's part, and there's community's part. You know, previously in addiction, you know, I thought I was kind of God and I was having to fix everything and control everything. It turns out that's exhausting. And so those three areas really helped me, because it's like, okay, Denise, what is actually in your control? What is your part? So then I can think about that and go, oh, okay, that's actually pretty good. That's way less stressful. So I'm keeping an eye on my choices and what I say and what I do and making amends and different kinds of things when I don't do my part right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is totally okay. It actually feels really good to be able to say, hey, I'm really sorry. Like, I shouldn't have said that. And I can imagine it made you feel this way. Is that kind of accurate? And then have that conversation than to just let that fester. You know, it took a little practice in recovery to understand how to do that and also feel comfortable with it. I remember I got really good practice when I was quitting smoking about almost 7 years ago exactly. 'Cause I was kind of grumpy. And so there was a lot of apology going on. Anyways, but over the years, you know, turning my life and will over to God's care and control has really been beneficial, because I think I didn't have like really good values that I was standing on in my life. You know,
mm-hmm.
Here, these different kinds of things had led me to making these choices. Like, I wasn't handling problems well. I was turning to substances and different kinds of illegal drugs to cope with life.
Right.
That wasn't going well. So as I started to look to what God's word said and praying and allowing him to help guide my life, everything's been changing. You know, it isn't about what Denise thought was the way to go about life. It's about the example for me of how Jesus lived his life and how he treated people and that being humble and stuff. And it's honestly what I've been learning over the last 12 years is that the quote, the world and how people tell you, you should be like, oh, I can't believe that person did that. You should blah, 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 is really quite the opposite of what God's word would say, you know? So in that turning my life and my will over, it's really been about a shift of how do I live? How do I treat people?
Right.
What are my values? And about a less of what, quote, Denise wants and more of like, what's good for Denise? What's good for how you care for and love other people?
Right.
You know, how you
show
up.
What's good for the people around you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And it's, I don't have to fight for what I need. That's not the economy that I live in with my life being turned over to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a totally different kind of economy. Yeah.
Right. And that gets into the, you know, second part of that. After you make the decision, you know, turn your life and your will over to the care of God. And what does that look like? Well, you kind of explained how it looks for you. I had to, looking at that, my will in my life, that seems like, you know, it's going to eliminate me from the equation, which turns out it will, you know, at least to a certain extent.
Did you feel like it was like a, see, to me, it felt like this like slow process of unfolding.
Oh, yeah.
Like over time,
oh, yeah.
Did it feel like that for you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Kind of good.
And somebody kind of changed the script on that and said, well, if your will in your life sounds like too big an ask or too crazy a concept for you to consider, why not just word it as turn your thoughts in your actions over to the care of God. And that made it not only more understandable for me, but actually more palatable because, you know, I admitted in the first step that, you know, I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable
by me. Agree. Yeah.
So to have somebody else, something else, you know, come in and help me sort out thoughts, the good from the bad, and then to, you know, direct my actions in a better direction,
that
was okay. I could deal with that. I could say, okay, I'm willing to do that. And again, you know, you put that all together, you made a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. Okay, great. That's a decision. That's not an action. What's the action? And you explain that. In AA, we immediately jump over to the fourth step and start listing our resentments that we have against people and in an effort to verify our various character defects. So the third step, you make a decision and you say, I'm gonna try and do these things, basically. I'm going to try and turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. So I've got to pick this higher power. I've got to have some sort of my own conception of it. And, you know, for me, it was simple enough because I had never lost that idea, that concept that there is, you know, probably is a loving, caring God in the universe somewhere, you know, in the world, in my head, you know, out in the forest, who knows? And in the book, they talk about, you know, who hasn't been out on a starlit night and looked up at the sky and go, this all just happened organically. And even if it did, it's in the best guess scientists have right now is that it goes back to what they call the Big Bang Theory. What was before the Big Bang Theory? So then you're getting into, you know, spiritual or metaphysical or something that even science can't figure. Sure. I mean, some scientists say, well, it's just because it all collapsed and then it blew apart and it'll collapse again and blow apart again. And I'm like, yeah, what started that chain?
Yeah. Well, it's trying to be open-minded here, but it's interesting to go from that to how, I mean, we're somewhat sophisticated, you know, in a sense. If you were to compare us against other animals, and that's not to say that other animals aren't extraordinarily intelligent or intuitive and all those kinds of things. Well, and even with that, along with human beings, I don't know. I would tend to, even if I was thinking outside of my faith and everything like that, I'd still tend to lean towards that someone's kind of overseeing all of this. Right. You know what I mean?
Some sort of creative force.
Again, me trying to be open-minded. I mean, I have my faith and I really believe what God's word says. But yeah, it just would seem like something's overseeing this.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was, again, it was simple enough for me to say, okay, and then I'm willing to grow in this belief. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to start turning my thoughts and my actions over. And so I started doing that. And you know, part of that process was, again, going through the balance of the steps. Mm-hmm. And through that process, it really, and by testing, like I've said before, you know, I had to test this guide thing out. You know, if he really wants me to be happy, happy, joyous, and free is what they tell us, you're going to have to show me some stuff here so that I can really see that it happens. And it happens on a regular basis to me now. Because when I made that decision, I said, I'm willing to open my eyes up to what's going on and not look at it from such a limited perspective, which is my perspective on the world.
And we can have some limited perspectives. I would assume, I know I did when I came into recovery, things had kind of become kind of small because of how big problems were, you know? Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's tough. Yeah. It's tough. It also makes me think when you're talking about this, that, you know, it talks about God and, you know, there are many different views and beliefs on what that is. You know, there are people who are Buddhist. I'm guessing that there's some kind of quote, you know, God over that. I don't know. I just know that there's a lot of different kinds of faiths and beliefs.
Right.
And so when someone enters, it's about you getting to decide what it is for you. It's just there being something outside of you, you know?
Right, right. And yeah, and a lot of the religions that don't necessarily have a Godhead have spiritual goals.
Okay, there we go.
You know, similar
like
to
peacefulness or something,
right,
too.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, achieving nirvana and in learning, becoming enlightened, which was what the Buddha saw.
There we go. Yeah, yeah.
Was seeking enlightenment, which is, you know, being one with the universe.
Right, and I think that they're pretty kind and all that.
Yeah, and in Christian religions, you know, we call that the God, you know, the Godhead. And we strive for God, what we call God consciousness, you know, to be able to be, I mean, ideally be one with God, but at least, you know, let God be our boss, you know, our employer.
Yeah, we're, Jesus, you know, is my savior, yeah.
Yeah, it says in the book, you know, we're under new management. God is, we've been fired from being God, so we are now become his agents, or like the Christian religion talks about, we're his children. Mm-hmm. You know, he's our father. So if you look at it that way, he's directing us. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been a bad child like me, you still are allowed to make huge mistakes.
Oh, yeah, he's the best father. He's the best father. He's like the ultimate example of a parent, unlike any parent I've ever met, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, and super caring.
Unlike you know, the parent that wields a belt wooden spoon, he just lets the consequences punish us. You know, if you play with matches long enough, you're going to get burned. Well, there's the consequence for, you know, doing something you shouldn't be doing.
I feel like the interesting thing that I've learned over the years is that before I was going through hard things, not understanding that God loves me and not understanding my identity and that he created me for a purpose and he's for me, and that in all of these hard things, I can look to him and he can help me learn. You know what I mean? I really feel like I was wasting the, what's the word I'm looking for? The hard human experience when here I could have been growing and learning. And before I was just resistant, like, no, I don't want any change. I don't want to experience anything hard. I just want comfort. There's going to be a point in which everything's going to be great. And I'm going to have the American dream and then I will have no more problems. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that was unrealistic and, and probably would have become extremely boring because without challenges and difficult things, like there just isn't that growth and stuff.
Right, so, right, exactly. Yeah. Well, and, you know, like you were talking about this past week at the LRC, it's spring break, so your volunteers are gone.
Yeah.
You know, and some staff are off on vacation at conferences whatever.
Like a training conference, yeah.
Yeah, and suddenly it's become...
it's just me and Sean.
You and Sean.
Yeah. We had one person in for a couple of hours yesterday because she's, you know, somebody more like our age, which was, praise the Lord, thank you that she was here. It was a little challenging.
But you learned from
it. No one died.
Yeah, you learned from it. You learned that you need to plan things out for like spring break or so when summer comes and you know things are going to be different.
Yeah.
And,
during the summer, I think the plan is that our Vandal recovery gal Dina is going to be here helping out,
right.
And that's going to be great because school will be shut down. So that was kind of So we had a front desk person for the couple of years that I've worked here, and we've decided not to, quote, have a front desk person, that we're going to have staff help, other staff members, and our volunteers and interns. And so we don't really have as many volunteers and interns during the summer, but Dina's going to be able to be here, and so we're going to make it work. I actually like being at the front desk. I don't know that I want to be at the front desk from 9 to 5. You know what I mean? And it's a little problematic when I need to meet with people, but you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. So we're trying to figure that all out, but I think it's going okay until it's just me and Sean and then it's just a little more tight.
Yeah. So here's a great opportunity for us to let people know that, you know, there are volunteer opportunities here.
Especially in the summer.
It doesn't have to be full-time all the time.
Most people come in for a few hours.
Yeah. If you can come in for a few hours. We'll teach you how to do, basic tasks that are required, you know, working the front desk, answering phones. It's not rocket surgery, but it's important.
Yeah.
You know, because people call up, hey, do you know where I can, find this or that?
And I always just tell people.
Is there someone I can talk to?
Yeah, and I always just tell people at the front desk, if they don't know, just take a message or come get one of us, and we'll be happy to answer the question.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, if you're going to have some time on your hand coming
during
up
the
this
summer.
I've known, not at this particular deal, but with other volunteer work I've done, teachers are great, great summer helpers, because a lot of them get paid all year round. Right. You know, they set their payroll up to do that. And they have some time, and sometimes, they're willing to do a little volunteer work because... Yeah. I love teachers. My sister was a teacher. She, if she actually took her wage and looked at it based on the hours that she worked, she probably worked for about 50 cents an hour, because they care. They just put in that much time and they care that much about the kids and the students. And, it's easy enough to transfer that empathy onto, people who are struggling in recovery, because we're all kids, sort of. But anyway, back.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a person struggling with, drugs or alcohol or mental health. We all have human condition problems.
Yeah, yeah, and you don't have to, it's a plus if you come from, a background where you have some recovery experience. That's always great, but it's not necessary. Just a buttload of empathy is all that's really required.
Yep.
So, like I said, we're learning. That third step is kind of a commitment to learn. I'm going to be willing to, turn my life and my will over to this thing that I don't understand. But, for a lot of people, when they first come in, it's the group that's the higher power. Come with us and have coffee. Here's your temporary sponsor, Bob. You know, he's going to help you work through the book. You can call him up and talk to him every day. Mm-hmm. I'm actually working with a young man now who has had some time in recovery and has had issue with relapses. And I met with him like to start doing book study yesterday. And he said, would you like me to like call you every day and see what's going on? I could see that's what he wanted mm-hmm. to do. Usually I have to ask people mm-hmm. to, you know, let's stay in regular contact. Right. Because if you're struggling, it's not usually the first thing that happens mm-hmm. in a relapse is not the thought to go get mm-hmm. the dope or go get the booze. It's that broken shoestring when you're already running a little late to get to work.
Well, and if you're already communicating with somebody, it's that much easier when you're not doing okay, honestly.
Right.
I feel like during a really hard time isn't necessarily the time to then figure out what you're going to do. You might want to practice it when you're doing good. Just a thought.
Right, exactly. And, you know, so, you know, he called me up today. We talked for a few minutes, not about necessarily about recovery, but,
yeah,
you know, just how he was doing, what he was doing, you know, just being mm-hmm. in contact, being available.
Yeah. Practicing.
You know, and that's all about, you know, being on that road to recovery,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's sometimes harder for me to work with people who have relapsed because I had relapse early in my recovery. And it's hard to explain to them what the process was for me. Mm-hmm. But the process, I think, is similar for most of us. And it's like I said, it's not you wake up in the morning and it's like, oh, I'm going to drink today. No, it can be a series of things happening. Your boss yells at you because you screwed something up. And then, you know, you get home from work and the water heater's broken. So you got to start working on figuring that out. And then, you know, a bunch of things happen
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you haven't been going to meetings because you just been working overtime.
Your steering wheel takes you towards the grocery store to go buy beer. You know,
exactly.
And that's the interesting thing is like our brains will click to like, okay, we're gonna go do this now because we need to survive. We're not okay unless we go drink or do drugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like this click, like I gotta. You know.
Yeah.
So I remember that when I quit smoking cigarettes for almost a year. And then something really rough happened. And then it's just like my car was like, we're going to the grocery store or we're going to the corner store and we're buying a pack of cigarettes like right now. You know what I mean? It was pretty hard to control not doing that. I'm not going to lie. It was tough. And then I had to quit smoking again.
Right.
And next month, let's see, what are we? March, April. Yeah. April 8th will be 7 years. So there you go.
Yeah. You know? Damn quitter.
You know. Yeah. Damn quitter. That damn nicotine quitter.
Well, that's the secret.
Hey, and at least I was smart enough to never pick up vape stuff either. Just saying, guys, maybe consider setting down the vape too.
Yeah, right. Which the jury stuff is still worries out on. Me. We still don't really know much about it. So that's a little scary.
There's a struggle in my family too with that. So it's not me, but it's tough.
Yeah. And the idea that you quit something, you know, I didn't quit drinking. I just stopped drinking.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then this program I'm in helps me stay stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's not like I couldn't drink if I wanted to. I've got thousands of dollars worth of credit cards in my pocket. I could be off on a tear and be in Vegas tonight, gambling, drinking, chasing women. I mean,
and then tomorrow you'd be in regret.
Right. I have a choice to do that, but it's, for me, it's not really worth it because I don't need to go back to thinking that way.
Yeah.
I have a new way of thinking and I have a new boss, you know, and an old boss, but she doesn't count in this equation in particular, you know, but not that, I mean, there was a time where, you know, I turned my life and my will over to the bottle and my wife to take care of the bills and stuff because I wasn't responsible for it. So higher power.
Yeah.
You know, for a while she was the higher power. Mm-hmm. And that's a real unfair thing to do to somebody.
Yeah, that is tough.
And it's like, oh, you're running around having fun, drinking, doing all your crazy stuff, and, you know, I'm stuck worried about,
you know,
paying stuff.
That is another really good thing. So two things come to mind with that, and that is that our spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever, one person in your life shouldn't be like your everything. I mean, they can be your everything person, but they can't be your like only person. I think that might be a better way to say it. It was really helpful to have some friends in recovery that, you know, that can listen to you and you can listen to them and stuff like that, so that your significant other isn't taking on like everything. Not to say that they're not the primary person, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like whether you're a person who struggles with the things that we have or just a normal human being in a relationship, it can be really good to have some extra friends.
Right.
That person doesn't have to be your everything sounding board, because that seems a little heavy. And right. I remember in my marriage, it was like, he was my everything problem solver and like listening to everything. I was like, oh my goodness. So unfair. Yeah. Having friends now is really beneficial. And then the other thing was, is, I just don't think I'd want to go do those other things, because life is pretty good right now. I've really adjusted to, you know, how things are now. It's pretty good. I'm now a little tiny bit over being in recovery a little bit longer than I had been in addiction. And I feel like that's kind of evened things out, and things are better than even before I ever started struggling with those things, like healthier, happier.
Right. Yeah. I look at the groups similarly to what you're talking about. You know, my wife is a normie, as in a normal temperate drinker. She can have half a cocktail and, you know, pour out the rest of it, which is alcohol abuse as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I can too.
That's my opinion.
That's not my struggle either.
But there are, when it comes to dealing with my alcohol problem, I need people who have had the alcohol problem to help me navigate and give me a different perspective.
Yeah, on it.
And you know, that's what the group, that's what the fellowship is all about. You know, I can call somebody up and say, I'm dealing with this weird scenario. It's got nothing to do with alcohol. But I'm, you know, I'm feeling this certain way, and I'm really uncomfortable. And there's a good chance that they have had experience with that particular feeling or scenario. And, you know, they can offer me their experience, you know, what they did and what happened as a result of it. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're like, well, I did this and it ended really badly. But what I learned was I could have done this other thing.
Right. Because they know what the bad cost could
be. Right. Yeah. They know what worked successfully and worked out well for everyone involved. And they also know when it turned into a dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah. So it's important to have those people outside of, you know, your intimate relationships, we'll say, because the people in those intimate relationships, they've seen what you've been through. You know, they have a particular perspective of you that can be good or bad. And so they're going to react to you similarly, you know, with that predisposition. You always have bad ideas.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know. I feel like I was just more saying, like, they could be in your recovery team. They could be a person in recovery with you. Yeah. But everybody needs more than just, like, that one other person.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need a lot of perspectives to help me try and figure things out.
For real.
So, yeah, so, you know, making this decision and then, you know, like I said, which is a commitment to myself to go through the rest of the steps so I will be able to turn my life and my will over to the care of this power who they tell me wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And... You know, and I got to that 12th step, which says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, you know, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice all the principles in all our affairs. You know, I get to have that spiritual awakening. And there we go. We're back to the God thing again. We made a decision back on in the third step, but they tell us that at the 12th, by this time, we will have had a spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. You know, we won't have it all figured out. Mm-hmm. We won't have God's personal cell number, but we will have awakened to the fact that there is a God. It's not me. And that this God will be able to help me, you know, when I need help, mm-hmm. if I'm willing to ask, and if I'm willing to listen. And that's a big thing. Yeah. That was a big thing for me. I have, you know, I have the committee in my head that argues what's a good decision and what's a mm-hmm. bad decision all the time. You know, unfortunately, the loudest voice is the one, the bad decision. You know, the one that says, sure, it's a bad idea, but it doesn't mean it won't be a good time. Yeah, and it's.
I feel like we need a mallet
while.
For that one, just like, just like whack them all, just like boom, Iridon, yeah. Whack Iridon, stop, well, stop piping in. Shh.
That's what my higher power does for me.
Right, it just whack them all.
My higher power
your dumb
is up
thoughts.
There with a big mallet, going yeah.
nope, Iridon.
Nope. And one of my favorite AA sayings is, your first thought in any particular scenario. Your first thought is for entertainment purposes only.
Just to make you chuckle.
Yeah, because like, yeah, that's yeah, sure. I'm gonna chase down that little old lady that you know accidentally cut me off in traffic, and you know give her a piece of my mind, and she's gonna be like, I didn't even see you.
Right. She'll be like, oh my gosh, you just changed my life. I'm going to drive completely different now.
Yeah.
Thank right. you.
Thank you.
Wow. Like, let me just get a little award out. What's your name? Yeah. Oh, Johnny. Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, let me post
sorry,
this
my,
up
my,
on
my
Facebook
brain just went off to like picture land on that one. You just, oh, yeah. You just created a really cool little snippet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember early in recovery, you know, I would take the garbage out and expect, you know, a attaboy,
right.
You know.
Oh, Johnny took the garbage out.
You know, put it on the calendar, a big happy face, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And
I was reading something about cleaning recently, and it was talking about the chemicals that are released from, you know, having it done and feeling accomplished and all this kind of stuff. It was really cool. It was right. talking about people who enjoy cleaning. And I was like, that's totally me. As I was watching this video explaining it for like 4 minutes, I was like, yeah, that's what I get out of that. Oh yeah. So there's like reward stuff and it feels good because it's something quote that you can control.
Right.
And it makes you feel better. And it helps organize your space, which frees up your brain a little bit.
Right.
And I was just like, yeah, you guys yep. nailed it for me. Thanks.
Yeah, I get yeah. a rush from looking at a clean toilet. I really do. It's super
doesn't
wrong,
it feel really good yeah, to like yeah. see how you've accomplished and like made everything look nice? I remember at the gym, so I worked at a Anytime Fitness for 9 years here in town. And sometimes like in the wintertime, I'd finish up, I'd been there for like 3 hours, make everything look really, really nice. Bathrooms, machines, floor and everything like that. And then I'm going to leave and then I'm like, what has happened here? Oh my goodness. And I have to like fix it again. And so I had to finally get to a point where I was like, just let it go. You already cleaned it once, but it was just so sad. Just,
yeah.
Cause it was like the ground outside was like snowy or muddy
right,
or something
yeah.
like that. And I was like, oh no. Yeah.
Right. Right. It's so funny when
now I know why I like cleaning so much.
There's a common area where a few other offices, enter through. And once in a while, those people would be staying late and I'll be mm-hmm. mopping the floor and they're like coming out of their offices to go home. And they're yeah. like, oh, I don't want to walk on your clean floor. And I'm like, well, I'm not carrying you.
Right. I didn't care about them walking on it. I just didn't want anyone to fall. I'm like,
right.
don't fall on the wet right. floor. That's all
I
care about.
And feel free to leave
footprints. Just don't fall.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone getting sued or hurt.
And I just tell them, you know, somebody's got to be the first, and this time it's mm-hmm. you know, so have a nice day. Hey, speaking of have a nice day, it's time for us to say have a nice day. Remind everyone, like Denise says, you can go to LatawRecoveryCenter.org and pick up some, you know, this episode or past episodes mm-hmm. if you miss us on the radio. Radio4all.net. You can pick more up there. Just search under Recovery Radio.
Yeah.
And You know, there's always the recovery center.
It's dopamine.
Yeah.
I had to look it up to remind myself. So dopamine, the reward and motivation chemical, is released when you complete tasks.
Yep.
Or check things off of a list or clean.
Or take drugs.
And then it says serotonin as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I had to go off on a little tangent that way.
There you go.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. You're not OCD at all.
So. No, not at all. Because I'm too tired now to be OCD.
Right. Yeah.
You get 52, you get more tired, so you can't be OCD anymore.
Yeah. Just let me get my little violin out for you, 52. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't need a violin. I just lastly have to say that my mom, she's actually since passed. She passed right before Thanksgiving last year. But about 4 years ago, she went into a nursing home in Colfax, and they noticed like that she just had some struggles. And so they gave her a medication that helped her with OCD. Uh-huh. And she like started to calm down, you know, and just like interact well and stuff like that and be way less of a pain in the booty. And I just remember thinking, there was a medicine for that. Darn it. I wish I would have had that 30 years ago. I'm glad that she's better for you guys, and it makes it seems like she's happier, but I wish I'd have known.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. There's medicines for that.
So, hey, we'll close it off with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or other substances, you do.
And come talk to me and Sean at the Recovery Center or the Whitman Recovery Center.
Yep, there's people here. We're here to help you with that. So have a great day, and we'll talk to y'all next week.